"Yes, ma'am," said Mason, straight-faced. "Absolutely." She wandered off, still eyeing us. "My hero," I declared. He pointed at the book.
"What is this?"
"Something the priest gave me. I had a question about the service." He stared at me, astonished. "Oh, stop it and look interested." I skimmed the index. "I'm trying to find some woman named Anna." Mason slid his chair over so that he was sitting right beside me.
"All right. Let's study."
I found a page number, and it took me to the section on St. Vladimir, not surprisingly. We read through the chapter, scanning for Anna's name. When we found it, the author didn't have much to say about her. He did include an excerpt written by some guy who had apparently lived at the same time as St. Vladimir. "And with Vladimir always is Anna, the daughter of Fyodor. Their love is as chaste and pure as that of brother and sister, and many times has she defended him from Strigoi, who would seek to destroy him and his holiness. Likewise, it is she who comforts him when the spirit becomes too much to bear, and Satan's darkness tries to smother him and weaken his own health and body. This, too, she defends against, for they have been bound together ever since he saved her life as a child. It is a sign of God's love that he has sent the blessed Vladimir a guardian such as her, one who is shadow-kissed and always knows what is in his heart and mind."
"There you go," Mason said. "She was his guardian."
"It doesn't say what shadow-kissed means."
"Probably doesn't mean anything."
Something in me didn't believe that. I read it again, trying to make sense of the old-fashioned language. Mason watched me curiously, looking very much like he wanted to help.
"Maybe they were hooking up," he suggested.
I laughed. He was a saint.
"So? Saints probably like sex, too. That brother and sister stuff is probably cover."
He pointed to one of the lines.
"See? They were bound together."
He winked.
"It's code.
Bound." It was a weird word choice, but that didn't necessarily mean Anna and Vladimir were ripping each other's clothes off. "I don't think so. They're just close. Guys and girls can just be friends." I said it pointedly, and he gave me a dry look.
"Yeah? We're friends, and I don't know what's in your heart and mind."
Mason put on a fake philosopher's look.
"Of course. Some might argue that one can never know what is in the heart of a woman."
"Oh, shut up," I groaned, punching him in the arm. "For they are strange and mysterious creatures," he continued in his scholarly voice. "And a man must be a mind reader if he ever wishes to make them happy."
I started giggling uncontrollably, and I knew I'd probably get in trouble again. "Well, try to read my mind and stop being such a..." I stopped laughing and looked back down at the book. "Bound together, and always knows what is in his heart and mind." They had a bond, I realized. I would have bet everything I owned, which wasn't much, on it. The revelation was astonishing. There were lots of vague stories and myths about how guardians and moroi used to have bonds. But this was the first I'd ever heard of anyone specific that it had happened to. Mason had noticed my startled reaction.
"You okay? You look kind of weird."
I shrugged it off. "Yeah, fine." Chapter 7. A couple weeks passed after that, and I soon forgot about the Anna thing as life at the academy wrapped around me. The shock of our return had worn off a little, and we began to fall into a semi-comfortable routine. My days revolved around church, lunch with Lyssa, and whatever sort of social life I could scrape together outside of that. Denied any real free time, I didn't have too hard a time staying out of the spotlight, although I did manage to steal a little attention here and there, despite my noble speech to her about coasting through the middle. I couldn't help it. I liked flirting. I liked groups. And I liked making smart-ass comments in class. Her new incognito role attracted attention simply because it was so different than before we left, back when she'd been so active with the royals. Most people soon let that go, accepting that the Dragomir princess was fading off the social radar and content to run with Natalie and her group. Natalie's rambling still made me want to beat my head against a wall sometimes, but she was really nice, nicer than almost any of the other royals, and I enjoyed hanging around her most of the time. And, just as Karova had warned, I was indeed training and working out all the time. But as more time passed, my body stopped hating me. My muscles grew tougher, and my stamina increased. I still got my ass kicked in practice, but not quite as badly as I used to, which was something. The biggest toll now seemed to be on my skin. Being outside in the cold so much was chapping my face, and only Lissa's constant supply of skincare lotions kept me from aging before my time. She couldn't do much for the blisters on my hands and feet. A routine also developed with Dimitri and me. Mason had been right about him being antisocial. Dimitri didn't hang out much with the other guardians, though it was clear they all respected him. And the more I worked with him, the more I respected him too, though I didn't really understand his training methods. They didn't seem very badass. We always started by stretching in the gym, and lately he'd been sending me outside to run, braving the increasingly cold Montana autumn. 3 weeks after my return to the academy, I walked into the gym before school one day and found him sprawled on a mat, reading a Louis L'Amour book. Someone had brought in a portable CD player, and while that cheered me up at first, the song coming from it did not. When Doves Cry, by Prince. It was embarrassing to know the title, but one of our former housemates had been obsessed with the 80s. "Whoa, Dimitri," I said, tossing my bag on the floor. "I realize this is actually a current hit in Eastern Europe right now, but do you think we could maybe listen to something that wasn't recorded before I was born?" Only his eyes flicked toward me. The rest of his posture remained the same.
"What does it matter to you? I'm the one who's going to be listening to it. You'll be outside running."
I made a face as I set my foot up on one of the bars and stretched my hamstrings. All things considered, Dimitri had a good-natured tolerance for my snarkiness. So long as I didn't slacken my training, he didn't mind my running commentary. "Hey," I asked, moving on to the next set of stretches, "what's with all the running anyway? I mean, I realize the importance of stamina and all that, but shouldn't I be moving on to something with a little hitting? They're still killing me in group practice."
"Maybe you should hit harder," he replied dryly.
"I'm serious."
"Hard to tell the difference."
He set the book down but didn't move from his sprawl.
"My job is to get you ready to defend the princess and fight dark creatures, right?"
"Yep."
"So, tell me this. Suppose you manage to kidnap her again and take her off to the mall. While you're there, a Strigoi comes at you. What will you do?"
"Depends on what store we're in." He looked at me. "Fine, I'll stab him with a silver stake." Dimitri sat up now, crossing his long legs in one fluid motion. I still couldn't figure out how someone so tall could be so graceful.
"Oh?"
He raised his dark eyebrows.
"Do you have a silver stake? Do you even know how to use one?"
I dragged my eyes away from his body and scowled. Made with elemental magic, silver stakes were a guardian's deadliest weapon. Stabbing a Strigoi through the heart with one meant instant death. The blades were also lethal to Moroi, so they weren't given out lightly to novices. My classmates had just started learning how to use them. I'd trained with a gun before, but no one would let me near a stake yet. Fortunately, there were two other ways to kill a Strigoi.
"Okay, I'll cut his head off." "Ignoring the fact that you don't have a weapon to do that, how will you compensate for the fact that he may be a foot taller than you?"
I straightened up from touching my toes, annoyed.
"Fine. Then I'll set him on fire." "Again? With what?"
"All right. I give up. You've already got the answer. You're just messing with me. I'm at the mall, and I see a Strigoi. What do I do?" He looked at me and didn't blink.
"You run."
I repressed the urge to throw something at him. When I was finished my stretches, he told me he'd run with me. That was a first. Maybe running would give me some insight into his killer reputation. We set out into the chilly October evening. Being back on a vampiric schedule still felt weird to me. With school about to start in 1 hour, I expected the sun to be coming up, not down. But it was sinking on the western horizon, lighting up the snow-capped mountains with an orange glow. It didn't really warm things up, and I soon felt the cold pierce my lungs as my need for oxygen deepened. We didn't speak. He slowed his pace to match mine, so we stayed together. Something about that bothered me. I suddenly very much wanted his approval. So I picked up my own pace, working my lungs and muscles harder. 12 laps around the track made 3 miles. We had 9 more to go. When we reached the third-to-last loop, a couple of other novices passed by, preparing to go to the group practice I'd soon be at as well. Seeing me, Mason cheered.
"Good form, Rose."
I smiled and waved back.
"You're slowing down,"
Dimitri snapped, jerking my gaze from the boys. The harshness in his voice startled me.
"Is this why your times aren't getting any faster? You're easily distracted?"
Embarrassed, I increased my speed once more, despite the fact that my body started screaming obscenities at me. We finished the 12 laps, and when he checked, he found we'd shaved 2 minutes off my best time. "Not bad, huh?" I crowed when we headed back inside for cool-down stretches. "Looks like I could get as far as the Limited before the Strigoi got me at the mall. Not sure how Lissa would do."
"If she was with you, she'd be okay."
I looked up in surprise. It was the first real compliment he'd paid me since I started training with him. His brown eyes watched me, both approving and amused. And that's when it happened. I felt like someone had shot me. Sharp and biting, terror exploded in my body and in my head. Small razors of pain. My vision blurred, and for a moment, I wasn't standing there. I was running down a flight of stairs, scared and desperate, needing to get out of there, needing to find me. My vision cleared, leaving me back on the track and out of Lissa's head. Without a word to Dimitri, I tore off, running as fast as I could toward the Moroi dorm. It didn't matter that I'd just put my legs through a mini-marathon. They ran hard and fast, like they were shiny and new. Distantly, I was aware of Dimitri catching up to me, asking me what was wrong. But I couldn't answer him. I had one task and one alone. Get to the dorm. Its looming, ivy-covered form was just coming into view when Lissa met up with us, her face streaked with tears. I came to a jarring stop, my lungs ready to burst. "What's wrong? What happened?" I demanded, clutching her arms, forcing her to look into my eyes. But she couldn't answer. She just flung her arms around me, sobbing into my chest. I held her there, stroking her sleek, silky hair while I told her it was going to be all right, whatever it was. And honestly, I didn't care what it was just then. She was here, and she was safe, which was all that mattered. Dimitri hovered over us, alert and ready for any threat, his body coiled to attack. I felt safe with him beside us. A half an hour later, we were crammed inside Lissa's dorm room with 3 other guardians, Miss Kirova and the hall matron. This was the first time I'd seen Lissa's room. Natalie had indeed managed to get her as a roommate, and the two sides of the room were a study in contrasts. Natalie's looked lived in, with pictures on the wall and a frilly bedspread that wasn't dorm issue. Lissa had as few possessions as I did, making her half noticeably bare. She did have one picture taped to the wall, a picture taken from last Halloween when we'd dressed up like fairies, complete with wings and glittery makeup. Seeing that picture and remembering how things used to be made a dull pain form in my chest. With all the excitement, no one seemed to remember that I wasn't supposed to be in there. Outside in the hall, other Moroi girls crowded together, trying to figure out what was going on. Natalie pushed her way through them, wondering what the commotion in her room was. When she discovered it, she came to a screeching halt. Shock and disgust showed on almost everyone's faces as we stared at Lissa's bed. There was a fox on the pillow. Its coat was reddish-orange, tinged in white. It looked so soft and cuddly that it could have been a pet. Perhaps a cat. something you'd hold in your arms and snuggle with. Aside from the fact that its throat had been slit, the inside of the throat looked pink and jelly-like. Blood stained that soft coat and had run down onto the yellow bedspread, forming a dark pool that spread across the fabric. The fox's eyes stared upward, glazed over with a sort of shocked look about them, like the fox couldn't believe this was happening. Nausea built up in my stomach, but I forced myself to keep looking. I couldn't afford to be squeamish. I'd be killing Strigoi someday. If I couldn't handle a fox, I'd never survive major kills. What had happened to the fox was sick and twisted, obviously done by someone too fucked up for words. Lyssa stared at it, her face death pale, and took a few steps toward it, hand involuntarily reaching out. This gross act hit her hard, I knew, digging at her love of animals. She loved them. They loved her. While on our own, she'd often begged me for a pet, but I'd always refused and reminded her we couldn't take care of one when we might have to flee at a moment's notice. Plus, they hated me. So she'd contented herself with helping in patching up strays she found and making friends with other people's pets, like Oscar the cat. She couldn't patch this fox up, though. There was no coming back for it. But I saw in her face that she wanted to help it, like she helped everything. I took her hand and steered her away, suddenly recalling a conversation from 2 years ago.
What is that? Is it a crow?
Too big. It's a raven.
Is it dead?
Yeah, definitely dead. Don't touch it. She hadn't listened to me back then. I hope she would now.
It was still alive when I got back,
Lyssa whispered to me, clutching my arm.
Barely. Oh, God, it was twitching. It must have suffered so much.
I felt bile rise in my throat now. Under no circumstances would I throw up.
Did you? No. I wanted to. I started to.
Then forget about it, I said sharply. It's stupid. Somebody's stupid joke. They'll clean it up, probably even give you a new room if you want. She turned to me, eyes almost wild.
Rose, do you remember that one time?
Stop it, I said. Forget about it. This isn't the same thing.
What if someone saw? What if someone knows?
I tightened my grip on her arm, digging my nails in to get her attention. She flinched.
No, it's not the same.
It has nothing to do with that. Do you hear me? I could feel both Natalie and Dimitri's eyes on us. It's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Not looking like she believed me at all, Lyssa nodded.
Get this cleaned up, Kirova snapped to the matron. And find out if anyone saw anything.
Someone finally realized I was there and ordered Dimitri to take me away, no matter how much I begged them to let me stay with Lyssa. He walked me back to the novice's dorm. He didn't speak until we were almost there.
You know something. Something about what happened. Is this what you meant when you told Headmistress Kirova that Lyssa was in danger?
I don't know anything. It's just some sick joke.
Do you have any idea who'd do it? Or why?
I considered this. Before we'd left, it could have been any number of people. That was the way it was when you were popular. People loved you, people hated you. But now, Lyssa had faded off to a certain extent. The only person who really and truly despised her was Mia. But Mia seemed to fight her battles with words, not actions. And even if she did decide to do something more aggressive, why do this? She didn't seem like the type. There were a million other ways to get back at a person. No, I told him. No clue.
Rose, if you know something, tell me. We're on the same side. We both want to protect her. This is serious.
I spun around, taking my anger over the fox out on him.
Yeah, it is serious. It's all serious. And you have me doing laps every day when I should be learning to fight and defend her. If you want to help her, then teach me something. Teach me how to fight. I already know how to run away.
I didn't realize until that moment how badly I did want to learn, how I wanted to prove myself to him.
to Lyssa and everyone else. The fox incident had made me feel powerless, and I didn't like that. I wanted to do something. Anything. Dmitri watched my outburst calmly, with no change in his expression. When I finished, he simply beckoned me forward like I hadn't said anything.
Come on. You're late for practice.
Chapter 8. Burning with anger, I fought harder and better that day than I ever had in any of my classes with the novices. So much so that I finally won my first hand-to-hand pairing, annihilating Shane Reyes. We'd always gotten along, and he took it good-naturedly, applauding my performance, as did a few others.
The comeback's starting, observed Mason after class.
So it would seem. He gently touched my arm.
How's Lyssa?
It didn't surprise me that he knew. Gossip spread so fast around here sometimes, it felt like everyone had a psychic bond. Okay. Coping. I didn't elaborate on how I knew that. Our bond was a secret from the student body. Mace, you claim to know about Mia. You think she might have done that?
Whoa, hey. I'm not an expert on her or anything. But honestly, no. Mia won't even do dissections in biology. I can't picture her actually catching a fox, let alone, killing it.
Any friends who might do it for her? He shook his head.
Not really. They're not really the types to get their hands dirty either. But who knows?
Lyssa was still shaken when I met her for lunch later. Her mood made worse when Natalie and her crew wouldn't shut up about the fox. Apparently, Natalie had overcome her disgust enough to enjoy the attention the spectacle had brought her. Maybe she wasn't as content with her fringe status as I'd always believed.
And it was just there, she explained, waving her hands for emphasis. Right in the middle of the bed. There was blood everywhere.
Lyssa looked as green as the sweater she wore. I pulled her away before I even finished my food and immediately launched into a string of obscenities about Natalie's social skills.
She's nice, Lyssa said automatically. You were just telling me the other day how much you liked her.
I do like her, but she's just incompetent about certain things. We stood outside our animal behavior class, and I noticed people giving us curious looks and whispering as they passed. I sighed. How are you doing with all this? A half-smile crossed her face.
Can't you already feel it?
Yeah, but I want to hear it from you.
I don't know. I'll be okay. I wish everyone wouldn't keep staring at me like I'm some kind of freak.
My anger exploded again. The fox was bad. People upsetting her made it worse, but at least I could do something about them. Who's bothering you?
Rose, you can't beat up everyone we have a problem with.
Mia, I guessed.
And others, she said evasively. Look, it doesn't matter. What I want to know is how this could have... That is, I can't stop thinking about that time.
Don't, I warned.
Why do you keep pretending that didn't happen? You, of all people. You made fun of Natalie for going on, but it's not like you've got a good grip on your control switch. You'll normally talk about anything,
but not that.
We need to forget about it.
It was a long time ago. We don't even really know what happened. She stared at me with those big green eyes, calculating her next argument.
Hey, Rose.
Our conversation dropped as Jesse strolled up to us. I turned on my best smile.
Hey.
He nodded cordially to Lyssa.
So, hey, I'm going to be in your dorm tonight for a study group. You think maybe...
Momentarily forgetting Lyssa, I focused my full attention on Jesse. Suddenly, I so needed to do something wild and bad. Too much had happened today.
Sure.
He told me when he'd be there, and I told him I'd meet him in one of the common areas with further instructions. Lyssa stared at me when he left.
You're under house arrest. They won't let you hang out and talk to him.
I don't really want to talk to him. We'll slip away. She groaned.
I just don't know about you sometimes.
That's because you're the cautious one, and I'm the reckless one.
Once animal behavior started, I pondered the likelihood of Mia being responsible. From the smug look on her psycho angel face, she certainly seemed to be enjoying the sensation caused by the bloody fox. But that didn't mean she was the culprit, and after observing her over the last couple of weeks, I knew she'd enjoy anything that upset Lissa and me. She didn't need to be the one who had done it.
Wolves, like many other species, differentiate their packs into alpha males and alpha females, whom the others defer to. Alphas are almost always the strongest physically, though many times confrontations turn out to be more a matter of willpower and personality. When an alpha is challenged and replaced, that wolf may find himself ostracized from the group, or even attacked.
I looked up from my daydreams and focused on Ms. Meissner.
Most challenges are likely to occur during mating season, she continued.
This naturally brought snickers from the class.
In most packs, the alpha pair are the only ones who mate. If the alpha male is an older, seasoned wolf, a younger competitor may think he has a shot. Whether that is true works on a case-by-case basis. The young often don't realize how seriously outclassed they are by the more experienced.
The old and young wolf thing notwithstanding, I thought the rest was pretty relevant. Certainly in the academy's social structure, I decided bitterly, there seemed to be a lot of alphas and challenges. Mia raised her hand.
What about foxes? Do they have alphas, too?
There was a collective intake of breath from the class, followed by a few nervous giggles. No one could believe Mia had gone there. Ms. Meissner flushed with what I suspected was anger.
We are discussing wolves today, Miss Rinaldi.
Mia didn't seem to mind the subtle chastising, and when the class paired off to work on an assignment, she spent more time looking over at us and giggling. Through the bond, I could feel Lissa growing more and more upset as images of the fox kept flashing through her mind. Don't worry, I told her. I've got a way.
Hey, Lissa,
someone interrupted. We both looked up as Ralph Sarkozy stopped by our desks. He wore his trademark stupid grin, and I had a feeling he'd come over here on a dare from his friends.
So admit it, he said. You killed the fox. You're trying to convince Kirova you're crazy, so you can get out of here again.
Screw you,
I told him in a low voice.
Are you offering?
From what I've heard, there isn't much to screw, I shot back.
Wow, he said mockingly. You have changed. Last I remember, you weren't too picky about who you got naked with.
And the last I remember, the only people you ever saw naked were on the internet. He cocked his head in an overly dramatic fashion.
Hey, I just got it. It was you, wasn't it?
He looked at Lissa, then back at me.
She got you to kill the fox, didn't she? Some weird kind of lesbian voo. Ah!
Ralph burst into flames. I jumped up and pushed Lissa out of the way, not easy to do since we were sitting at our desks. We both ended up on the floor as screams, Ralph's in particular, filled the classroom. And Ms. Meissner sprinted for the fire extinguisher. And then, just like that, the flames disappeared. Ralph was still screaming and patting himself down, but he didn't have a single singe mark on him. The only indication of what had happened was the lingering smell of smoke in the air. For several seconds, the entire classroom froze. Then slowly, everyone put the pieces together. Moroi magic specializations were well known, and after scanning the room, I deduced three fire users. Ralph, his friend Jacob, and Christian Ozera. Since neither Jacob nor Ralph would have set Ralph on fire, it sort of made the culprit obvious. The fact that Christian was laughing hysterically sort of gave it away, too. Ms. Meissner changed from red to deep purple.
Mr. Ozera, she screamed. How dare you? Do you have any idea? Report to Headmistress Kirova's office now.
Christian, completely unfazed, stood up and slung his backpack over one shoulder. That smirk stayed on his face.
Sure thing, Miss Meissner.
He went out of his way to walk past Ralph, who quickly backed away as he passed. The rest of the class stared, open-mouthed. After that, Ms. Meissner attempted to return the class to normal, but it was a lost cause. No one could stop talking about what had happened. It was shocking on a few different levels. First, no one had ever seen that kind of spell. A massive fire that didn't actually burn anything? Second, Christian had used it offensively. He had attacked another person. Moroi never did that. They believed magic was meant to take care of the earth, to help people live better lives. It was never, ever used as a weapon. Magic instructors never taught those kind of spells. I don't think they even knew any. Finally, craziest of all, Christian had done it. Christian, whom no one ever noticed or gave a damn about. Well, they'd noticed him now. It appeared someone still knew offensive spells after all, and as much as I had enjoyed the look of terror on Ralph's face, it suddenly occurred to me that Christian might really and truly be a psycho. Liss, I said as we walked out of class, please tell me you haven't hung out with him again. The guilt that flickered through the bond told me more than any explanation could. Liss! I grabbed her arm.
Not that much, she said uneasily. He's really okay.
Okay?
Okay?
People in the hall stared at us. I realized I was practically shouting. He's out of his mind. He set Ralph on fire. I thought we decided you weren't going to see him anymore.
You decided, Rose, not me.
There was an edge in her voice I hadn't heard in a while. What's going on here? Are you guys... you know?
No, she insisted. I told you that already, God.
She shot me a look of disgust.
Not everyone thinks and acts like you do.
I flinched at the words. Then we noticed that Mia was passing by. She hadn't heard the conversation, but had caught the tone. A snide smile spread over her face.
Trouble in paradise?
Go find your pacifier and shut the hell up, I told her, not waiting to hear her response. Her mouth dropped open, then tightened into a scowl. Lissa and I walked on in silence, and then Lissa burst out laughing. Like that, our fight diffused.
Rose.
Her tone was softer now. Lissa, he's dangerous. I don't like him. Please be careful. She touched my arm.
I am. I'm the cautious one, remember? You're the reckless one.
I hoped that was still true. But later, after school, I had my doubts. I was in my room doing homework when I felt a trickle of what could only be called sneakiness coming from Lissa. Losing track of my work, I stared off into space, trying to get a more detailed understanding of what was happening to her. If ever there was a time for me to slip into her mind, it was now, but I didn't know how to control that. Frowning, I tried to think what normally made that connection occur. Usually, she was experiencing some strong emotion, an emotion so powerful it tried to blast into my mind. I had to work hard to fight against that. I always sort of kept a mental wall up. Focusing on her now, I tried to remove the wall. I steadied my breathing and cleared my mind. My thoughts didn't matter, only hers did. I needed to open myself to her and let us connect. I'd never done anything like this before. I didn't have the patience for meditation. My need was so strong, however, that I forced myself into an intense, focused relaxation. I needed to know what was going on with her, and after a few more moments, my effort paid off. I was in. Chapter 9. I snapped into her mind, once again seeing and directly experiencing what went on around her. She was sneaking into the chapel's attic again, confirming my worst fears. Like last time, she met no resistance. Good God, I thought.
Could that priest be any worse about securing his own chapel? Sunrise lit up the stained glass window, and Christian's silhouette was framed against it. He was sitting in the window seat.
You're late, he told her. Been waiting a while.
Lissa pulled up one of the rickety chairs, brushing dust off it.
I figured you'd be tied up with Headmistress Kirova.
He shook his head.
Not much to it. They suspended me for a week, that's all. Not like it's hard to sneak out.
He waved his hands around.
As you can see.
I'm surprised you didn't get more time.
A patch of sunlight lit up his crystal blue eyes.
Disappointed?
She looked shocked.
You set someone on fire.
No, I didn't. Did you see any burns on him?
He was covered in flames.
I had them under control. I kept them off of him.
She sighed.
You shouldn't have done that.
Straightening out of his lounging position, he sat up and leaned toward her.
I did it for you.
You attacked someone for me?
Sure. He was giving you and Rose a hard time. She was doing an okay job against him, I guess. But I figured she could use the backup. Besides, this'll shut anyone else up about the whole fox thing, too.
You shouldn't have done that, she repeated, looking away.
She didn't know how to feel about this generosity.
And don't act like it was all for me. You liked doing it. Part of you wanted to, just because.
Christian's smug expression dropped, replaced by one of uncharacteristic surprise. Lissa might not be psychic, but she had a startling ability to read people. Seeing him off guard, she continued,
Attacking someone else with magic is forbidden, and that's exactly why you wanted to do it. You got a thrill out of it.
Those rules are stupid. If we used magic as a weapon instead of just for warm and fuzzy shit, Strigoi wouldn't keep killing so many of us.
It's wrong, she said firmly. Magic is a gift. It's peaceful.
Only because they say it is. You're repeating the party line we've been fed our whole lives.
He stood up and paced the small space of the attic.
It wasn't always that way, you know. We used to fight, right along with the Guardians, centuries ago. Then people started getting scared and stopped. Figured it was safer to just hide. They forgot the attack spells.
Then how did you know that one?
He crooked her a smile.
Not everyone forgot.
Like your family? Like your parents?
The smile disappeared.
You don't know anything about my parents.
His face darkened. His eyes grew hard. To most people, he might have appeared scary and intimidating, but as Lissa studied and admired his features, he suddenly seemed very, very vulnerable.
You're right, she admitted softly after a moment. I don't. I'm sorry.
For the second time in this meeting, Christian looked astonished. Probably no one apologized to him that often. Hell, no one even talked to him that often. Certainly no one ever listened. Like usual, he quickly turned into his cocky self.
Forget it.
Abruptly, he stopped pacing and knelt in front of her so they could look each other in the eye. Feeling him so close made her hold her breath. A dangerous smile curled his lips.
And really, I don't get why you, of all people, should act so outraged that I used forbidden magic.
Me, of all people? What's that supposed to mean?
You can play all innocent if you want. And you do a pretty good job, but I know the truth.
What truth is that?
She couldn't hide her uneasiness from me or Christian. He leaned even closer.
That you use compulsion? All the time?
No, I don't, she said immediately.
Of course you do. I've been lying awake at night trying to figure out how in the world you two were able to rent out a place and go to high school without anyone ever wanting to meet your parents. Then I figured it out. You had to be using compulsion. That's probably how you broke out of here in the first place.
I see. You just figured it out, without any proof.
I've got all the proof I need, just from watching you.
You've been watching me? Spying on me to prove I'm using compulsion?
He shrugged. No, actually, I've been watching you just because I like it. The compulsion thing was a bonus. I saw you use it the other day to get an extension on that math assignment. And you used it on Ms. Carmack when she wanted to make you go through more testing.
So you assume it's compulsion. Maybe I'm just really good at convincing people.
There was a defiant note in her voice. Understandable, considering her fear and anger. Only she delivered it with a toss of her hair, which, if I didn't know any better, might have been considered flirtatious. And I did know better, right? Suddenly, I wasn't sure. He went on, but something in his eyes told me he'd noticed the hair, that he always noticed everything about her.
People get these goofy looks on their faces when you talk to them, and not just any people. You're able to do it to Moroi. Probably vampires, too. Now that's crazy. I didn't even know that was possible. You're some kind of superstar. Some kind of evil, compulsion-abusing superstar.
It was an accusation, but his tone and presence radiated the same flirtatiousness she had. Lyssa didn't know what to say. He was right. Everything he'd said was right. Her compulsion was what had allowed us to dodge authority and get along in the world without adult help. It was what had allowed us to convince the bank to let her tap into her inheritance. And it was considered every bit as wrong as using magic as a weapon. Why not? It was a weapon. A powerful one, one that could be abused very easily. Moroi children had it drilled into them from an early age that compulsion was very, very wrong. No one was taught to use it, though every Moroi technically had the ability. Lyssa had just sort of stumbled into it, deeply, and as Christian had pointed out, she could wield it over Moroi as well as humans and vampires.
"What are you going to do, then?" she asked. "You going to turn me in?"
He shook his head and smiled.
"No. I think it's hot."
She stared, eyes widening and heart racing. Something about the shape of his lips intrigued her.
"Rose thinks you're dangerous," she blurted out nervously. "She thinks you might have killed the fox."
I didn't know how I felt about being dragged into this bizarre conversation. Some people were scared of me. Maybe he was, too. Judging from the amusement in his voice when he spoke, it appeared he wasn't.
"People think I'm unstable, but I tell you, Rose is 10 times worse. Of course, that makes it harder for people to fuck with you, so I'm all for it."
Leaning back on his heels, he finally broke the intimate space between them.
"And I sure as hell didn't do that. Find out who did, though, and what I did to Ralph won't seem like anything."
His gallant offer of creepy vengeance didn't exactly reassure Lyssa, but it did thrill her a little.
"I don't want you doing anything like that. And I still don't know who did it."
He leaned back toward her and caught her wrists in his hands. He started to say something, then stopped and looked down in surprise, running his thumbs over faint, barely there scars. Looking back up at her, he had a strange, for him, kindness in his face.
"You might not know who did it, but you know something. Something you aren't talking about."
She stared at him, a swirl of emotions playing in her chest.
"You can't know all my secrets," she murmured.
He glanced back down at her wrists and then released them, that dry smile of his back on his face.
"No, I guess not."
A feeling of peace settled over her, a feeling I thought only I could bring. Returning to my own head and to my room, I sat on the floor staring at my math book. Then, for reasons I didn't really get, I slammed it shut and threw it against the wall. I spent the rest of the night brooding until the time I was supposed to meet Jesse came around. Slipping downstairs, I went into the kitchen, a place I could visit so long as I kept things brief, and caught his eye when I cut through the main visiting area. Moving past him, I paused and whispered,
"There's a lounge on the 4th floor that nobody uses. Take the stairs on the other side of the bathrooms, and meet me there in 5 minutes. The lock on the door is broken."
He complied to the second, and we found the lounge dark, dusty, and deserted.
The drop in guardian numbers over the years meant a lot of the dorms stayed empty. A sad sign for Moroi society, but terribly convenient right now. He sat down on the couch, and I lay back on it, putting my feet in his lap. I was still annoyed after Lissa and Christian's bizarre attic romance, and wanted nothing more than to forget about it for a while. "You really here to study, or was it just an excuse?" I asked.
"No, it was real. Had to do an assignment with Meredith."
The tone in his voice indicated he wasn't happy about that.
"Ooh," I teased. "Is working with a vampire beneath your royal blood? Should I be offended?"
He smiled, showing a mouthful of perfect white teeth and fangs.
"You're a lot hotter than she is."
"Glad I made the cut."
There was a sort of heat in his eyes that was turning me on, as was his hand sliding up my leg. But I needed to do something first. It was time for some vengeance.
"Mia must, too, since you guys let her hang out with you. She's not royal."
His finger playfully poked me in the calf.
"She's with Aaron, and I've got a lot of friends who aren't royal, and friends who are damps. I'm not a total asshole."
"Yeah, but did you know her parents are practically custodians for the Drozdovs?"
The hand on my leg stopped. I'd exaggerated, but he was a sucker for gossip, and he was notorious for spreading it.
"Seriously?"
"Yeah, scrubbing floors and stuff like that." I could see the wheels turning in his dark blue eyes, and had to hide a smile. The seed was planted. Sitting up, I moved closer to him and draped a leg over his lap. I wrapped my arms around him, and without further delay, thoughts of Mia disappeared as his testosterone kicked in. He kissed me eagerly, sloppily even, pushing me against the back of the couch, and I relaxed into what had to be the first enjoyable physical activity I'd had in weeks. We kissed like that for a long time, and I didn't stop him when he pulled off my shirt. "I'm not having sex," I warned between kisses. I had no intention of losing my virginity on a couch in a lounge. He paused, thinking about this, and finally decided not to push it.
"Okay."
But he pushed me onto the couch, lying over me, still kissing me with that same fierceness. His lips traveled down to my neck, and when the sharp points of his fangs brushed against my skin, I couldn't help an excited gasp. He raised himself up, looking into my face with open surprise. For a moment, I could barely breathe, recalling that rush of pleasure that a vampire bite could fill me with, wondering what it'd be like to feel that while making out. Then, the old taboos kicked in. Even if we didn't have sex, giving blood while we did this was still wrong, still dirty. "Don't," I warned.
"You want to?"
His voice held excited wonder.
"I can tell."
"No, I don't." His eyes lit up.
"You do."
"How?"
"Hey, have you done it before?"
"No," I scoffed. "Of course not." Those gorgeous blue eyes watched me, and I could see the wheels spinning behind them. Jesse might flirt a lot and have a big mouth, but he wasn't stupid.
"You act like you have. You got excited when I was by your neck."
"You're a good kisser," I countered,
though it wasn't entirely true. He drooled a little more than I would have preferred. "Don't you think everyone would know if I was giving blood?" The realization seized him.
"Unless you weren't doing it before you left. You did it while you were gone, didn't you? You fed Lissa."
"Of course not," I repeated.
But he was onto something, and he knew it.
"It was the only way. You didn't have feeders. Oh, man."
"She found some," I lied. It was the same line we'd fed Natalie, the one she'd spread around and that no one except Christian had ever questioned. "Plenty of humans are into it."
"Sure," he said with a smile.
He leaned his mouth back to my neck.
"I'm not a blood whore," I snapped, pulling away from him.
"But you want to. You like it. All you damp girls do."
His teeth were on my skin again, sharp.
"Wonderful."
I had a feeling hostility would only make things worse, so I diffused the situation with teasing.
Stop it, I said gently, running a fingertip over his lips. I told you, I'm not like that. But if you want something to do with your mouth, I can give you some ideas.
That piqued his interest. Yeah? Like what?
And that's when the door opened. We sprang apart. I was ready to handle a fellow student, or even possibly the matron. What I was not ready for was Dimitri. He burst in the door like he expected to find us, and in that horrible moment, with him raging like a storm, I knew why Mason had called him a god. In the blink of an eye, he had crossed the room and jerked Jesse up by his shirt, nearly holding the moroi off the ground.
"What's your name?"
barked Dimitri.
Jesse, sir. Jesse Zelkos, sir.
Mr. Zelkos, do you have permission to be in this part of the dorm?
No, sir.
Do you know the rules about male and female interactions around here?
Yes, sir.
Then I suggest you get out of here as fast as you can, before I turn you over to someone who will punish you accordingly. If I ever see you like this again...
Dimitri pointed to where I cowered, half-dressed on the couch.
I will be the one to punish you. And it will hurt. A lot. Do you understand?
Jesse swallowed, eyes wide. None of the bravado he usually showed was there. I guess there was usually, and then there was being held in the grip of a really ripped, really tall, and really pissed off Russian guy.
Yes, sir.
Then go.
Dimitri released him, and if possible, Jesse got out of there faster than Dimitri had burst in. My mentor then turned to me, a dangerous glint in his eyes. He didn't say anything, but the angry, disapproving message came through loud and clear. And then it shifted. It was almost like he'd been taken by surprise, like he'd never noticed me before. Had it been any other guy, I would have said he was checking me out. As it was, he was definitely studying me, studying my face, my body. And I suddenly realized I was only in jeans and a bra, a black bra at that. I knew perfectly well that there weren't a lot of girls at this school who looked as good in a bra as I did. Even a guy like Dimitri, one who seemed so focused on duty and training and all of that, had to appreciate that. And finally, I noticed that a hot flush was spreading over me, and that the look in his eyes was doing more to me than Jesse's kisses had. Dimitri was quiet and distant sometimes, but he also had a dedication and an intensity that I'd never seen in any other person. I wondered how that kind of power and strength translated into, well, sex. I wondered what it'd be like for him to touch me and... Shit! What was I thinking? Was I out of my mind? Embarrassed, I covered my feelings with attitude. You see something you like? I asked.
Get dressed.
The set of his mouth hardened, and whatever he'd just felt was gone. That fierceness sobered me up and made me forget about my own troubling reaction. I immediately pulled my shirt back on, uneasy at seeing his badass side. How'd you find me? You following me to make sure I don't run away?
Be quiet, he snapped,
leaning down so we were at eye level.
A janitor saw you and reported it. Do you have any idea how stupid this was?
I know, the whole probation thing, right?
Not just that. I'm talking about the stupidity of getting in that kind of situation in the first place.
I get in that kind of situation all the time, comrade. It's not a big deal. Anger replaced my fear. I didn't like being treated like a child.
Stop calling me that. You don't even know what you're talking about.
Sure I do. I had to do a report on Russia and the RSSR last year.
USSR. And it is a big deal for a moroi to be with a vampire girl. They like to brag.
So?
So?
He looked disgusted.
So don't you have any respect? Think about Lisa. You make yourself look cheap. You live up to what a lot of people already think about vampire girls, and it reflects back on her. And me.
Oh, I see. Is that what this is about? Am I hurting your big, bad male pride? Are you afraid I'll ruin your reputation?
My reputation is already made, Rose. I set my standards and lived up to them long ago. What you do with yours remains to be seen.
His voice hardened again.
Now get back to your room, if you can manage it without throwing yourself at someone else.
Is that your subtle way of calling me a slut?
I hear the stories you guys tell. I've heard stories about you.
Ouch. I wanted to yell back that it was none of his business what I did with my body. But something about the anger and disappointment on his face made me falter. I didn't know what it was. Disappointing someone like Kirova was a non-event. But Dmitri? I remembered how proud I'd felt when he praised me the last few times in our practices. Seeing that disappear from him? Well, it suddenly made me feel as cheap as he'd implied I was. Something broke inside of me. Blinking back tears, I said, "Why is it wrong to, I don't know, have fun? I'm 17, you know. I should be able to enjoy it."
"You're 17, and in less than a year, someone's life and death will be in your hands."
His voice still sounded firm, but there was a gentleness there, too.
"If you were human, or Morai, you could have fun. You could do things other girls could."
"But you're saying I can't." He glanced away, and his dark eyes went unfocused. He was thinking about something far away from here.
"When I was 17, I met Ivan Zelkos. We weren't like you and Lissa, but we became friends, and he requested me as his guardian when I graduated. I was the top student in my school. I paid attention to everything in my classes, but in the end, it wasn't enough. That's how it is in this life. One slip, one distraction." He sighed. "And it's too late."
A lump formed in my throat as I thought about one slip or one distraction costing Lissa her life. "Jesse's a Zeklos," I said, suddenly realizing Dmitri had just thrown around a relative of his former friend in charge.
"I know."
"Does it bother you? Does he remind you of Ivan?"
"It doesn't matter how I feel. It doesn't matter how any of us feel."
"But it does bother you." It suddenly became very obvious to me. I could read his pain, though he clearly worked hard to hide it. "You hurt. Every day, don't you? You miss him." Dmitri looked surprised, like he didn't want me to know that, like I'd uncovered some secret part of him. I'd been thinking he was some aloof, antisocial, tough guy, but maybe he kept himself apart from other people so he wouldn't get hurt if he lost them. Ivan's death had clearly left a permanent mark. I wondered if Dmitri was lonely. The surprised look vanished, and his standard serious one returned.
"It doesn't matter how I feel. They come first, protecting them."
I thought about Lissa again. "Yeah, they do." A long silence fell before he spoke again.
"You told me you want to fight, to really fight. Is that still true?"
"Yes, absolutely."
"Rose, I can teach you, but I have to believe you're dedicated. Really dedicated. I can't have you distracted by things like this."
He gestured around the lounge.
"Can I trust you?"
Again, I felt like crying under that gaze, under the seriousness of what he asked. I didn't get how he could have such a powerful effect on me. I'd never cared so much about what one person thought. "Yes, I promise."
"All right, I'll teach you. But I need you strong. I know you hate the running, but it really is necessary. You have no idea what Strigoi are like. The school tries to prepare you, but until you've seen how strong they are and how fast, well, you can't even imagine. So I can't stop the running and the conditioning. If you want to learn more about fighting, we'll need to add more trainings. It'll take up more of your time. You won't have much left for your homework or anything else. You'll be tired. A lot."
I thought about it. About him. And about Lissa. It doesn't matter. If you tell me to do it, I'll do it. He studied me hard, like he was still trying to decide if he could believe me